The reading this evening begins in James 1, verse 12. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures.
I think this is the first time I've ever had the song before the lesson and the song after the lesson exactly the same. I guess there's not that many songs on temptation, so we'll go with it. One thing about being a priest, I know there's occupations that come and go. Yeah, I guess an example would be buggy whips. Probably a time when a person would really get into buggy whips and they're probably the rage and stuff like that, but then they just passed into oblivion in history and stuff like that. But one thing about being a preacher, there's always a need for it, and there's no end to examples as to illustrations I could give you. Just before I came here, I got on the internet, and sometimes my naivety shows, like 20 or some odd years ago when they ran the Guess commercials. I don't know how many months it ran before I finally figured out what it was, what it was advertising. I kept trying to guess what they were talking about. Guess what? And finally somebody explained to me that was the label. So today when I went to the suspect emails, because I have to do a little filtering, whatever, and it asked, this one email that came up said, do you want to have an affair? And I figure maybe it's some kind of chocolate they're advertising. And I looked again and goes, they're actually advertising whether I wanted to have an affair. Because it's better to have with someone that's married, because then they're less likely to inform on you because they're married also. And I go, what? Where's the delete button? So it's it's out there, and this is kind of segues into what we're talking about here. Temptation is the biblical term for seduction of the world. It's out there. It's everywhere in all sorts of forms. You never know what's going to hit you. And it confronts us, in order to draw us into things that are wrong. And it's just, you never know where it's going to come from, what form and whatever it is. And we've got to be prepared for it. And it's, as we go through this, if resisting temptation were really as easy as just saying no, as Nancy Reagan put it, then most of the Bible would not be necessary for a lot of doctors and psychiatrists and everything else. On the contrary, temptation is such a strong and varied thing that even the details of this lesson just begin to address the problem and just barely touch on it. We know that many temptations are very strong because they originally may have been sent to us as trials by God to make us stronger, to help us develop and become, more mature, more developed, whatever. And we need that in order to keep growing. If we do not grow to the task that God gives us and shirk our responsibility, then our trials overwhelm us and become our undoing. If you think of it as we go to school, we take it in gradients. It starts out like math. We start with addition, subtraction, and go through the algebra and the trig up to calculus. Now, if we don't keep up with it, then our minds never grow to the task. And like most, the kids and stuff like that, we start to drop out. We never get to the point where we can take on the greater things. And so we don't develop the maturity, and the world passes us on. And that has to do with our spiritual development as well. And so this is sometimes the problems that, you know, we don't see, that we just haven't prepared ourselves for life, you know, in its totality, especially in our spiritual maturity. And so what we're going to be doing is looking at the mechanics of it. You know, as God puts it this way, no temptation has overtaken you, but that which is common. You know, the things that are around the world are not from outer space. There are things that most people have to deal with. Yeah, and many people deal with them in one form or other, and Jesus dealt with them all, okay? It's common to man, and God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted. If you're a child of God, whatever situation you're getting into, you know, you're not going to be subjected to anything that you can't handle, especially with his help. You know, that's the point. You know, he's going to put a hedge around it. So that, in fact, he goes on, he will provide a way of escape. Or, you know, he'll as the rest of this, you know, verse goes, he'll give you a means of enduring it. In that word, you know, as to actually be able to use it, you know, either for his glory or, you know, for your own benefit. And that's what the kind of confidence you have to have, because this is a promise. You know, you can take it on. In fact, I marvel sometimes at just how much, you know, load that, you know, some people can take as Christians. Family problems, you know, business problems, worldly problems, whatever, and they just keep maintaining and they deal with the things. Health problems. You know, as you look at Job, you know, he underwent a phenomenal amount of things, but God knew he could handle them. I mean, he pointed out to Satan, you know, just consider my servant. And he allowed Satan to do that because he knew Job could handle it and that God would be a perimeter around it to not let it go beyond, you know, what was necessary. We learn from the scriptures that temptations can arise from the healthy desires that God has given us. Maturity is learning to handle those desires in a proper way and knowing when they're about to become inordinate. That is, you know your own limitations. You know when, you know, the things that are inside of you are there, that God has given them to you, and you can exercise them, and you know when to put a rein on them. You understand that temptation is not an adult entertainment. The world calls it adult. You know it's not. It's childish stuff. You know, there to lure people that don't know any better. You know, back off. But even when that happens, that things become inordinate, you know, we understand that God is always around to help us out, to back away from it, to not only provide valuable instruction from the scriptures, but also to afford us pressure opportunities to escape temptations when we succumb. Now, the passage that was read by Warren, let no one say when he is tempted, I'm being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. God doesn't tempt us, and we can't take, you know, the comedians, you know, like the devil made me do it. Okay, nobody can make you do anything, but you can allow someone to make you do something. That's what the passage says. Each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own. Now, instead of lust there, you know, the word that's used can go either way. It's desire. It's your desire that's within you. It's a healthy thing that God has given you. You have normal appetites. You can keep them checked, and they're there for, you know, that God has put them there, you know, for you to enjoy certain things. You have a need or a desire to eat. That should be there. It lets you know, you know, that it's time to feed the body. Okay, you let it get inordinate and, you know, into gluttony. Okay. So when it gets out of hand, it becomes lust. But it starts out as just desire. But when the desire gives over to lust, has conceived into that, then it gives birth to sin. Now, the sin then is, again, by the normal definition of the word, is missing the mark. Okay, now the desire has missed the mark. It's gone beyond what it should. And once it's gone beyond and it's accomplished, going beyond and gets set in what it wants to do, then it brings forth a pattern of living that brings forth death. Before that, you can bring it back. And this is what John gets into. It talks about, you know, a one-time stepping across. Okay, that, you know, that's walking in the light, sinning, and then coming back. Okay, the blood of Christ covers that kind of stuff. But in 1 John 5, it talks about stepping over and keeping on stepping over until you're walking in the pattern. Now you're walking away from God and you're no longer in the light. So God can help you realize, okay, I'm outside the light, it's time to step back in. Okay. So God helps us deal with this stuff, you know, if we recognize it and work with Him and whatever. So we have levels of the problem and God giving us a handle on it and how to deal with it. As we look at this, we see levels of the thing, and basically sometimes how we, how it approaches us, we might say. There is, first of all, an ignorance of sin. This is one of the things we got to be careful of. The world is caught up because it is unsuspecting. People die in the physical world many times because they don't understand how things work. You know, people that's, you know, stick things they shouldn't into light sockets. You know, kids, you know, they stick wires into plugs, play with blasting caps, petting dangerous animals. Even adults do things like, I can remember as a child growing up in the San Fernando Valley. When I was young, I don't know if you, maybe you've been to Thousand Oaks. It's all grown up now, but when I was a kid, there was nothing in Thousand Oaks. Absolutely nothing. The only thing out there, we used to drive, you know, 20 miles out or so, was jungle land. There was a place out there you could visit where they kept all the animals for the movies. That's where they trained them. You can go out there and watch them go through their paces. I remember reading an article in the paper where this guy had raised this lion from a cub, and they were good friends and everything else. He used to play with it and everything. But he forgot that it's still a wild animal. And one day he caught it on a bad day. And that thing literally took his head off. It happens when you forget the kind of things you're playing with. Men often begin a life of sin as unaware as they begin a life of crime. How do young people get, you know, sucked into crime? Here, deliver this package for me. I'll pay you $10. And come to find out maybe what they were doing was being a mule for a cocaine drop. Now they're sucked in. They didn't know what they're delivering, but now they're accomplice. Now they have to keep doing what they're told or they'll get turned in. Unsuspecting, they didn't know what they're doing, but they should have asked questions. It's just blatant ignorance, but you really can't. What does Ephesians say? This I say, therefore, and affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer just as the Gentiles walk. Well, how's that? Well, in the blindness, in the darkness, not caring, not questioning, in the futility of their mind, you know, just bouncing around, you know, not caring what purpose, you know, they're serving or whatever, being darkened in their understanding, not trying to figure things out, excluded from the life of God, not caring that they're excluded because of the ignorance that's in them. No, it's not because they're ignorant, but because what's in them is wrong. What they understand is wrong. What they think they know is wrong. The reality that they've assumed, that they accept, is not the real reality. Because of the hardness of their heart, that's the way they live. It says, rather, as obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts, which were yours in your ignorance. Or as, that they were warned, in Hosea's time, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Not knowing God's law, not knowing the world, who really created it, what his laws are, what his obedience is. a whole nation of people were destroyed, wiped off the face of the earth. Destroyed, literally. So, in this, the best thing to do is to know the Word. The more one understands what one is doing, the greater the chances are one will survive harsh experiences. Where sin is concerned, there's no better manual than the Bible. Morality is not a thing of the past. Morality is the consequence. Morality is knowing what you should be doing. The lack of it is the consequence of the power to resist. Not knowing what to do. If immorality does not become outdated, then neither does the will to resist, nor the power of God. It's still there. You can know how to deal with the problems around us. Therefore, Paul warns, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of God is. Therefore, there's ways to learn how to resist sin. Start with asking God for help. God is a loving Father, and it is the Father's pride if His children ask Him for help. Mark 14:38. Keep watching and praying. Be on the alert. Keep looking around. Be careful that you may not come into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Matthew 6, pray then this way, do not lead us into temptation. God can help us circumvent the things that are out there, but deliver us from the evil one. Sometimes the temptation is going to be out there and you can't help it sometimes, but we can be delivered from the clutches of the evil in the final outcome. We can also overcome the negative addictions with positive ones. The bad habits we form run deep. Of necessity, good new habits must be formed so that we do not easily swing back into a former rut. James 4, 7 says, submit therefore to God, resist the devil, he will flee from you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be miserable, and the double-minded there. Don't go this way, that way, get rid of one side of it. And just stay with the good side. Be miserable and mourn and weep. Look at the things you've done and let them affect you. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy into gloom. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord. He will exalt you. There's a parable that the Lord gives about the demon that leaves an individual. And then when he comes back, he finds an empty place. Swept, clean. He goes, okay. So he brings back seven demons. And the last situation is even worse than the first. What if he found seven angels there instead? Now there's no place for the seven demons. This is why Paul constantly gets into, don't just put off, but put on also. Okay. When you're going down a dirt road, there's a rut, and your car naturally goes into the ruts. Even if you try to get out of them, if you take your hands off the wheel, the car goes back into the ruts. Okay, that's the bad road. What you have to do is start a new rut. Okay, that's your new life. Yeah. And that's what you have to dig deeper and deeper and deeper. Start a new road. You know, that's the only way you can handle it. And that's what God is saying. You know, start a different addiction, a positive addiction, a good addiction. And in this, maintain a proper conduct. God's instruction on how to do something is our protection from evil, giving us a proper outlet for our needs. It is when we try to circumvent these that life begins to slip away. Notice in Paul's advice to the marriage is God's plan for us to handle the drives that are within us, the desires, in a proper way. You know, in a good way, procreating, having children, you know, beginning new life, new generations, whatever. Therefore, he says, don't deprive any. You know, if you're having a fight, don't let the sun go down your wrath. Don't deprive one another. Now, if you do, then don't wonder, you know, if you're having affairs and stuff. You know, you've opened your door, you know, to problems. You know, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Don't give him the opportunity. And then there's times when you just got to get out of there. You know, when you may not have the ability. When things will just overwhelm. You know, you might be a good boxer. You know, get in the ring and take on one opponent. When suddenly the doors fly open and there's a whole army there, you don't stand to take them on. Had an instructor one time who was a bouncer, you know, and did handle the problems, you know, in the bar, you know, and then one night after closing, he and his buddy, you know, they started to lock up, they went out the back door, and there was a gang waiting for them. One of the guys they'd thrown out was a member of a gang, and they looked at him, and okay, shut the door, went back in, and went out the front door, you know, no use, you know, doing something stupid. Yeah, don't test yourself. Do the smart thing. Learn from others to look after yourself. If your family's dysfunctional, don't stay around and learn from them. Find somebody else's family. Okay. Look to see who's, you know, working and go, you know, hang around with them. Yeah, I remember as a young person, you know, just seeing in the church, you know, whose family I liked, and sometimes just, you know, taking the parents aside and asking them how they worked. You'd be surprised sometimes the answers you get. Of this one couple, I thought, you know, just the neatest couple. I go, man, you guys, it's like you've just hit it off all the time. And they looked at me like I was crazy. They go, man, we used to fight all the time. We just worked it out. You know, and usually that's the answer you'll get. You know, they had their problems and they worked it out. So maybe Olin and Angie, they're just weird. And they just always be. They seem just to make it all together all from the very beginning. But generally, it's a hard-fought process. And that's what you learn to do. A smart man learns from his own mistakes. But a wise man learns from the mistake of others. You can't make all the mistakes. You let other people make the mistakes and learn from it. And for the young people that go, you know, I've heard this, well, experience is the best teacher. Yeah, right. The codicil is only the worst student needs the best teacher. Think about it. Notice Paul's advice. Even if a man is caught in a trespass, you that are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. So even as you're helping others, you know, look to see how this person got sucked in. You could go the same way. And this one, apply the ounce of prevention. This is one of the things counselors will tell anybody that's addicted. Alcoholic, go through your house and get rid of every bit of alcohol in the house. Throw it out. Into porno, get rid of the magazines, the mailings, the, you know, the computer programs, you know, whatever's coming in, the emails, you block them, whatever. Get rid of all the temptations. Just clean house. Get rid of it all. Don't give the devil an opportunity. I think those are the... Notice what Paul... Yeah. We are destroying speculations, every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge. This last part, we are taking every thought captive. Yeah. If something's got ambush written all over it, you know, that's the next part. You don't walk down dark alleys. You don't go to office parties. Don't get in the back seat of a Volkswagen. You know, there's things you just don't do. You don't date alone. There's just, you know, things you know where it's headed. You know, where's your mind taking you? Just don't do it. I mean, there's things, like I said, there's always examples. I remember a couple of years ago when Nancy Pelosi got up and waved this big thick thing and goes, you've got to pass this in order to find out what's in it. And I'm going, no, 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 you guys are mature. Don't vote for this thing. You know. It's like, I can't believe these adults did this. What person in his right mind signs a contract without knowing what's in it? Ounce of prevention, read it first. I can't believe it. They signed it. Didn't read it. Now we're paying for it. You know, boy, are we paying for it. I got some examples just this last week. This from the, this is a quick example. New federal wedding tax. How Obamacare will dramatically penalize marriage. This is from the Heritage Foundation, the most conservative think tank in the United States. Just a few examples. For example, a 60-year-old couple, each earning $30,000 a year, will receive $10,425 per year less in benefits if they marry or remain married. Simply by divorcing and then living together, the couple can boost their post-tax take-home income by nearly one-fourth. As tables 4 and 5 show, under the Senate bill, married couples in general will receive between $1,500 and $10,000 less in government health care support than would cohabitating couples with the same tax income. Lifetime marriage tax. Annual penalties actually understate the depth of anti-marriage bias in the Senate bill. The bill's wedding tax is perpetual. Penalties against married couples add up year after year as long as the couple remains married. Some couples who remain married throughout their adult lives will face cumulative penalties of over $200,000 during the course of their marriage. Obamacare is against marriage in this country. Judicial Watch files suit on behalf of the Kawa Orthodontics. I love this. On Tuesday, at a press conference held at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., Judicial Watch announced the filing of a lawsuit on behalf of Dr. Larry Kawa of Kawa Orthodontics against the U.S. Department of Treasury, Secretary of Treasury Jack Lew, the Internal Revenue Service, and IRS Director Daniel Hoard. Our lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida on behalf of Boca Raton-based company argues that the delay of the employer mandate exceeded the Obama administration's statutory authority, is arbitrary, capricious, and contrary to law, and is otherwise unlawful. By law, the mandate was required to take effect January 1, 2014. On January 2, 2013, however, the Obama administration officially postponed the mandate. And here's why this is a problem for Kawa Orthodontics and the 200,000 at least other large employers in the U.S. These companies invested substantial resources in an effort to prepare for the controversial provision, which now won't take effect for another year. It costs them tons of money. That's their complaint. Someone asked Judicial Watch, doesn't Judicial Watch oppose the employer mandate? I said, yes, we do. We object to the employer mandate and the entire Obamacare law, which is why we filed an amicus curiae brief, which the U.S. Supreme Court challenging, with the U.S. Supreme Court challenging its constitutionality. But we also understand that under the U.S. Constitution, the law cannot be changed by legislation passed by Congress and signed by the President. And to paraphrase Ulysses S. Grant, the best way to ensure the repeal of a bad law is to enforce it vigorously. If you want to know what principle God is using sometimes by rubbing our nose into bad things we do, I think he was consulting with Ulysses S. Grant. You know, and just when we make bad decisions, God just wants us to rub our nose into it until we understand just how bad a decision we made. Okay? So, anyway, the ounce of provision, you know, prevention could have saved us a lot of headaches, but we're going to have to live with it. So anyway, sometimes we try to push ourselves just to the brink, not knowing when it's going to break off. It's better, as we look at life, to give ourselves plenty of room. And first of all, God says, flee immorality. Better to do it. Or to those who want to get rich, fall into temptation and snare. It's not, you know, rich is not bad. It depends on how you view it. There's a lot of rich people in the Bible. But if you want to get rich at any cost, that's the problem. If you're willing to do anything to get the money, yeah, then this love of money, you know, taking all foolish and harmful desires and all sorts of evil. God's concern is this. For since he himself was once tempted in that which he suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted. For we do not have a high priest, the Hebrew writer says, who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet was without sin. He overcame. He's been through it. He's walked a mile in our shoes, so to speak. You know, he knows all the pitfalls. He knows all the complications. He knows the strengths and the weaknesses. And he knows the things necessary in order to help us overcome. Peter tells us, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. Okay, I'm running out of breath and moisture. It's a dry day, so we'll just make the invitation. If you're ready to come to God, we gave a certain invitation this morning. Put it another way. If you've already come to God, let's finish up the invitation. Committing yourself to God is the other part of it. The eunuch, after he was baptized, went on his way rejoicing. It wasn't a decision that, you know, once he made it, that he, you know, quit, you know, in his service to God. You know, he committed himself to it. Christians, you know, in the first century did that. And Christians after that also. They met on a daily basis. You know, they couldn't get enough of God's word in association with Christians. For the centuries that followed, against the dictation and power of Rome, they even met in the catacombs among the dead in order to hold services. Even against the dictates of the European and the English monarchs, the people spent monthly wages in order to buy one sheet of the Bible, in order to study it by lamplight among the hedges of the farmlands. They love God's word that much. How much is your dedication to God? How much is your desire for God's word? How much do you want to take it into your life? This is the call that God has for us. He gave his son for us. That much is his desire, in order to have us in his, have us as part of his life. What is your desire to have him as part of yours? You know, if it's that's your desire, whatever we can do for you, please let us know as we stand to sing.